is Sustainable East End, a show about land use, energy and water resources, transportation, and the farming and food industries on Eastern Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon, co-producer with Tony Ernst. As the UN climate conference winds down in Paris, advocates for cutting the use of fossil fuels worldwide are still looking for action from the Earth's major polluters. Climate scientists say we're already experiencing climate change, more extreme weather, longer droughts, worse flooding, warmer average ocean and surface temperatures. With this comes disappearing glaciers, melting ice caps, expanding deserts, rising sea levels, ocean acidification, and the mass extinction of animal species. Scientists warn us we need to bring CO2 levels in our atmosphere back down to 350 parts per million. We're currently at 400 and rising by 2 to 3 parts per million annually. It makes an insulating blanket on our atmosphere that forces the climate to warm. And because oceans absorb a large amount of the CO2, they're becoming more acidic. That threatens seafood stocks and, indeed, a collapse of marine ecosystems. Will the world's leaders get serious in time to avert climate catastrophe? Climate scientist James Hansen told Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Last week that as long as fuels are dirt cheap, people will keep burning them.
We're not going to reduce emissions as long as we let fossil fuels be the cheapest form of energy. There are lots of countries that want to lift their people out of poverty, and of course they should do that. But everybody would be better off if the price of fossil fuels was honest. It should include its cost to society.
The Citizens Climate Lobby is a nationwide organization that has a plan to fix the problem. They have proposed legislation to put a fee on carbon pollution and give all of the revenue back to households. Tony Ernst spoke with power generation engineer Tip Rowland, a local member of Citizens Climate Lobby and the Southampton Town Sustainability Committee. Brolin worked in industry designing coal and nuclear power generation systems. He also helped manage the Department of Energy's nuclear power and nuclear fusion programs. Here's our interview with Tip Rowland.
Tip Rowland, welcome to Sustainable East End.
Thank you, Tony.
Tip, tell us about the Citizens Climate Lobby.
Citizens Climate Lobby is a nonprofit, nonpartisan group consisting at the present of about 12,000 members around the country. Our mission is to lobby Congress to pass what's called a carbon fee and dividend law that would levy a fee on fossil fuels as they come out of the ground and return all of the money collected to the public on an equal basis.
Tip, could you describe the problem with burning fossil fuels?
Yes. We live in a greenhouse on Earth. The top of the greenhouse is our atmosphere. Included in the atmosphere are carbon dioxide, water vapor, of course, oxygen, and various other greenhouse gases. So this keeps the planet warm. If we add carbon dioxide, which is a greenhouse gas, more of the heat is trapped under the atmosphere. Hence, the globe, the Earth warms. This is a problem because as the Earth keeps heating up, various things change related to the climate. Obviously, you will get, sea level rise. This happens simply because the sea is getting warmer. As it gets warmer, it expands, so it encroaches on the coastline. In addition, as you've probably heard, our ice, both in Antarctica and in Greenland, is melting. This further increases sea level rise. The result of sea level rise is pretty obvious to those of us who live on the East End. We live 2.5 miles from the ocean here in Watermill. But if the worst case scenario came about, we literally would have, long after we're gone, of course, oceanfront property. So when we burn fossil fuels, and this was a surprise to me until I looked it up, 1 ton of coal, when burned, generates 1.8 tons of carbon dioxide. This is because the carbon in the coal combines with the oxygen in the air. So we have, over the period of the Industrial Revolution, say from the mid-1700s on, burned enough fossil fuels to increase the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, CO2 being carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, by a factor twice as much as we've observed. What we've observed is the concentration has increased from roughly 300 parts per million, which it has been for hundreds of thousands of years, to currently 400 parts per million, basically in the past 150 years, with a significant increase in the rate that we are adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere over the past 50 years. What this does is increase the Earth's temperature. This is measured. NASA combines all these measurements, puts them out for all to see. So by burning the fossil fuels, we've increased the greenhouse effect. The Earth's temperature is increasing, and that is bad for ultimately all of us. We have drought, we have change in the pattern that we've become used to as far as food production. Areas that used to produce food could become deserts. And obviously sea level rise is a problem for our coastal cities.
How long would it take before it becomes uncomfortable or uninhabitable for all life?
Exactly how long is a question. I don't know the answer, and climate scientists seem to disagree, or at least aren't sure themselves. It could be 100 years, it could be much longer. The other day I noticed an article in the New York Times which pointed out that in the Middle East near the Red Sea, where the Arab Emirates are, it could become very unlivable fairly quickly with temperatures which would not permit you to stay outside for more than a short period of time before you simply couldn't live. Now, that's a local area. I think the bottom line, though, is not whether it'll be 50 years or 100 years, but that unless we do something, it will be. So it takes a long time to turn off this climate machine that we have created and cut down on the burning of fossil fuels. These are major changes. So we need to start now because carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for a couple of hundred years. You can't just simply turn it off.
How does the Citizens Climate Lobby want to combat this? Can you explain the carbon fee and dividend plan?
Yes, what Citizens Climate Lobby is proposing, this would be a federal law, is that a fee, some would call it a tax, be levied on carbon dioxide emissions from the fuel, that is coal, oil, natural gas, where it comes out of the ground. So the coal mining companies and the oil companies would pay this fee, starting at, say, $10 per ton of carbon dioxide emitted. And the fee would go up every year. The money would go to the Treasury, but, and here's the good part for all of us, all the money would be returned to the public. it would be returned on an equal basis. That is, each household would get an equal amount determined by the number of adults. Each adult would get a fixed amount, and each children, up to a maximum of two per household, would get half that. So what happens when you think about this is the people who are using a lot of, say, gasoline, will pay more in carbon fee than those people who use less. But when the money is returned, everyone gets an equal amount. When you do the arithmetic, it turns out that since people in the lower income levels, like the bottom 40%, they actually spend less on fossil fuels on a per capita basis than the wealthier do.
I want to clarify something.
Yes.
Who is paying the carbon fee? I thought it was the people who produce the fossil fuels.
Good question. Yes, the people who produce the fossil fuels will pay it, but it'll be another cost to them, which they'll pass on to all of us. So like everything else of this nature, we will pay it, but when we get the money back, if we're in the lower 40% in particular, we will actually get more money back from the fund than we paid in carbon fees.
The Citizens Climate Lobby says the funds, the dividends sent to the people, create jobs. How do these funds create jobs?
The way they produce jobs is that those in the lower 40% of the income levels will receive more money than they pay out. This is verified by the fact that the lower 20%, for example, of the income levels buy only 9% of the gasoline. However, they will get back from the carbon fee and dividend, they'll get back in dividend 20%. Therefore, they'll end up with more money in their pocket than was taken out by the higher gas prices. Since they're in the lower income spectrum, they'll spend it. They need the money. They have essentially a zero savings rate. If they get more money, they'll spend it. When they spend it, it will create jobs. And the study showed that most of these jobs will be in the healthcare and the retail areas. For the higher percentile, the people in the upper 40% of the income spectrum, they will pay more than they get back, but they're in the upper part of the spectrum. Therefore, if this affects them at all, it would probably be a slight reduction in their savings rate, but not their spending.
This is Sustainable East End on WPKN Radio. We're talking with Tip Brolin, a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby, about their plan to reduce the use of fossil fuels with a carbon fee that would be returned to everyone as a dividend.
What happens when some of the fuel producers try to retreat outside the United States?
There is something called a border adjustment in the law, which means that if we import goods from a country which does not have a comparable carbon fee system, we would put a tariff on their goods. This would try to level the playing field regarding imports and exports.
Will existing and proposed trade treaties allow this?
I haven't seen anything to the contrary, but frankly, I haven't done anything. I haven't done any investigation on that. I think that the idea would be that if we proposed, if we do this, we the United States, if we were to do this, we're such a huge consumer that others would be almost forced to do the same thing. In other words, we would be leading this. In the long run, if people cut back on the use of fossil fuels, everyone will benefit. So I think the point is, it's good for the globe, not just good for the United States. Hopefully we'll be able to convince people of that.
I just wanted to interject that I read just the other day that the recently announced TPP legislation, which is promoted by our present administration, it allows corporations to sue governments and basically compromise our U.S. regulations.
Yes, there's a difference between, of course, a regulation and a law. This would be a law. Regulations are promulgated by the executive branch without usually congressional approval other than the authority that the Congress gives to the executive to promulgate regulations. So this, I would guess, would not be something that the government could be sued about. I forgot to mention something earlier, which is quite important, actually. If you look at the long-term impact of adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, it turns out that at least five planetary extinctions, that is, the extinction of 90% of the life on the planet, have been caused over millions of years ago, by global warming. And the mechanism at that time was a very high concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere caused by volcanic activity, which then warms the oceans. The oceans can't hold oxygen anymore. They become saturated with hydrogen sulfide, which exists in the deep ocean. When the hydrogen sulfide gas gets to the surface, it's poisonous and it kills all plant and animal life, which is a little scary. And in our case, the last of these extinctions happened 54 million years ago when the carbon dioxide was 900 parts per million. At the current rate of increase, without our doing anything to stop it, we will reach 900 parts per million in 200 years, which doesn't guarantee that this will happen, but it has happened in the past under those conditions. And I find that, frankly, quite scary.
Is there legislation that has been written that the climate lobby is promoting?
You can find the bones of the legislation on the citizensclimatelobby.org website. That will explain the details.
The next thing is, how does Citizens Climate Lobby propose to sell these ideas?
The intent is that we lobby Congress. In fact, in June, twice a year, Citizens Climate Lobby members go to Congress, talk to our congressmen. Not that it can't be done between those periods. In June, there were, I think, 900 people who descended on Capitol Hill to do this. Also, each of us, for example, my talk at the Southampton Library earlier this week was, last week, was intended to be a public education project. The idea is excite the people who vote for the congressman, put pressure on the congressman so that he recognizes not only is this important, but and essential for that matter, but that if he doesn't support it, his supporters will wither away. He is dependent on contributions. We all know about contributions from industry to various congressmen, but he's elected by votes, and if we can influence the number of votes they get, we can influence the congressman. So we work very hard to do that.
Where do the media fit into this?
Well, the media reaches more people than the average individual, obviously. So if we can write letters to the editor, have them published, write articles, have them published. Over the past year, there have been, I think, about 2,000 articles published around the country, including letters that people have written. All of it works toward educating the people and educating the Congress on the need for this. But personal contact with the congressman and his staff is very important, and that's done also.
Okay, I'm going to back up a bit. I wanted to ask about cap and trade. I thought that was dead, but I understand that Governor Cuomo was touting that recently.
I didn't see the article. Cap and trade was dead, but it is part of attempts to put a price on carbon. And when you put a price on something, it tends to affect how much of it is consumed. So I think this proposal by Citizens Climate Lobby is better. Cap and trade can result in polluters simply buying the right to pollute. I've never fully taken that on board as a good thing. Instead, what we should be doing is severely cutting our use of fossil fuels. This will make it easier to do that and cost-effective without enriching the federal treasury to do it.
Should the federal government be helping by subsidizing some of the newer technologies?
I think yes. The federal government does subsidize through the Department of Energy mainly and our tax code various renewable energies, for example. I have here behind the barn 10 kilowatts of photovoltaic cells, which we're very happy to have. We have them because of a federal subsidy through tax rebates, et cetera. Yes, the Citizens Climate Lobby proposal is not intended to substitute for other programs which encourage people to use carbon-free energy sources. It's intended to attack the demand question, but yes, we definitely need support for research and development to get better carbon-free energy sources.
Tip Brolin, thanks for telling us about the Citizens Climate Lobby and the carbon fee and dividend proposals. Where can listeners go to find out more about this?
Go to the Citizens Climate Lobby website. That would be citizensclimatelobby.org, and you'll find lots of information explaining it and backing up the claims.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure for me.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Tip Brolin, a member of the East End chapter of the Citizens Climate Lobby. More information about the carbon fee and dividend and the problem of global warming is available at citizensclimatelobby.org. Sustainable East End is heard each month right here on the second Thursday at noon, and the programs are archived at sustainableeastend.blogspot.com. Today's program was produced by Tony Ernst and yours truly, Francesca Rhiannon.